Hi, I'm Yuya from Myanmar, and my spirit fruit is a durian.
That's Yuya. This week, we're diving into Yuya's story on Humans of Minerva. Welcome to Humans of Minerva, a podcast which captures the interesting stories of humans at Minerva. I'm your host, Jonathan, and today I'll be sitting down with the incredible Yuya from M25. Hello, Yuya.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm actually doing amazing, despite the fact that I have a lot of workload bombarding me at the moment. This weekend really just flew by with Friendsgiving on Friday, and threw off the whole course of my weekend. But we're doing fine, staying hydrated, staying healthy, and just taking it one thing at a time. So I'm doing good.
What was your Friendsgiving like? I think I saw on your Instagram that you sang a little song. I didn't even know that you had singing in your wheelhouse. You're just stacking all of these talents.
I did, and oh my goodness. When I say this was the best Friendsgiving Minerva has ever created, like, that is definitely not an overstatement whatsoever. So what we did was we took a little trip. It was like 1.5 hour. We were in these like school buses. So it was a school field trip. Like, who gets to say? They go on college field trips, and we get there, and the venue is this incredible green space with like a whole house, like a dance floor with disco balls. There was a swimming pool, a volleyball court, a whole football field. The best thing about it was that we were all able to have our own pace, and we weren't forced to be in one space the whole time. And you know, like, there were a lot of moments where we're like, yeah, we're tired to socialize, so let's just go in the corner and like chill, do our own thing. So it was beautiful. We played, we laughed, we had fun. And I did perform a little song. I sang the song called From the Start by Leifei. And it was pretty spontaneous. The idea came to me one night when I was listening to the song. And I knew if I slept on it, I would change my mind. So I immediately texted the person who was responsible for arranging, for organizing Friendsgiving. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to perform a song. And then I was like, the decision has been made. I'm not going to back off. And the day came and I was like, what have I done to myself? I am absolutely terrified. But I think it went well. I got a lot of positive feedback. And honestly, I was reflecting on it. Singing has been the most, like, I even want to say I learned how to sing before I learned how to talk. But that's how I feel, because since, I don't know, as long as I can remember, music has been something that just keeps me going.
It sounded phenomenal. Obviously, I only caught a snippet of it on your Instagram, but it sounded great. So great job.
Thank you.
I'm also interested about you saying that it was like a very spontaneous decision. One of the first blog posts that I wrote was called The 6-Minute Rule, and how whenever I come up with an idea for a project I want to work on, or just like a blog post I want to write, if I don't act on it within like 6 minutes, it's safe to say that it's not happening. And I started to take it to like a pretty extreme level. Like, within 6 minutes, I'd like either be contacting somebody or I'd already started working on the thing, but it was such a game changer for me.
Wow.
I want to start in a weird place. What's your name?
that's, where did you
for
pull
most people,
that
that's
one
a
from?
Weird question.
Never heard of that one.
For
What's
most people,
name?
That's a weird question.
Mm-hmm.
I've known you as Yuya, but then when I scrolled back a bit on your Instagram, I saw that you posted this thing, and the caption was, "I'm no longer going by Helen. I'm changing my name back to Ted Yuya." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, that's really interesting." And why did you make that change?
Yeah, and thank you for pronouncing it correctly. Actually, it's exactly that. It's Ted Yuya. And that was the name that I was born with. You know, coming out of my mom's womb, my parents already decided a name for me. They're like, yeah, this is our daughter. We're going to name her Te Yuya. Actually, that wasn't the whole name. There was a different component to it. It was Te Yuya Aum. And I'm from Myanmar. And in Burmese, which is the language that we speak in Myanmar, our names don't have first, middle, last. We don't do family names. So every individual has a unique set of combination of words. So it can go from one word to like 5 words. And usually each word contains some kind of meaning that let's say the parents wish the child to have when they grow up. And so to break down my name, Tet means sharp, Yuya means gentle and nurturing, and Aung means success. And when I turned 1 year old, my parents went to this monk, and this monk told them that having this word Aung in my name is bringing everyone like bad luck and that they should get rid of it. So they threw away my success out of the picture. I know. I'm like, why did you do that to me? Now what am I going to do with my life? I can be sharp and gentle, but not successful. Like, what is this unfairness going on? So yeah, that's how it began. And I had, you know, no say in how I was going to be named because I couldn't even talk when I was named. So I went by Taeyuya for the first, I guess, a good 10 years of my life. I'm so bad at like year, like age and grade. I can never correlate like how old you're supposed to be when you go in each grade. So I'll just go by like grade school. So when I reached first grade, I actually changed my name from Taeyuya to Christina because I had a crush on this boy. His name was Chris. And I also actually, don't judge me on this. I was young. I didn't know what I was doing. I knew I was passionate about something, you know, you need to have that passion. And also I had one of my best friends was named Christine. And so when I went to her for advice, I was like, oh, I want to change my name. I don't know what I want to change it to. And I gave her this whole context and she was like, what about Christina? That's the perfect mixture of the both of us. And I thought that was the most brilliant idea. So I went with it. I told all my friends and my teachers. And so I still have a certificate from first grade when I won like Student of the Month award where it says Christina. I just look back and I'm like, silly, silly times. But that didn't last too long. I no longer had a crush on that boy after that year. So I'm like, okay, time to change my name again. So I went back to my default, like Taeyuya for another couple years. And fourth grade was when I came up with Helen, which is the name that actually has been the name that I've used for the longest time in my life so far. So I'm 21. I used it from fourth grade, like all the way to second year of college. So that's been longstanding. And honestly, I don't have a good story about where the name Helen came from. I don't have like an inspiration or where I even got it from. It just kind of came to me. And yeah. So I thought it suited me and I went with it for, you know, as long as I can remember. And then I only very recently, so 2023, this was right before New Year's, I had this realization after taking a few classes here at Minerva and learning more about language and how, you know, it really shapes the way that you see the world and how you interact with the world and how powerful that is. So when I started to realize and recognize that, I started to question what my name even means to me. And I realized it feels very hollow. Like Helen to me, aside from the memories I've had of people calling me that name, I don't really have a personal connection with it. Also using English as a language and exploring concepts of colonialism, like that all kind of came together and I clicked and I was like, I can no longer go by Helen. This does not feel right for me anymore. So I decided to change it back to Taeyuya. And this time, I didn't want people to call me by my full name anymore. I really liked Yuya. And I like how now with just Taeyuya, without the success, it like evens out the feeling. Because it's a paradox if you think about it. Like Ted is the sharpness and Yuya is like the gentleness, the nurturing quality. So yeah, I told my friends, I did a free trial, like maybe a week of trial of like, just call me that. Let's see how it feels. And I ended up feeling just so warm and fuzzy every time I heard it. Because first of all, they were speaking the language that I've grown up with. And second, they were just calling me like gentle. And I'm like, oh, that means so much to me. So that's where I'm at now. And I don't regret the whole journey and how long it took me. And I'm very happy to be where I'm right now and very, all the lessons I picked up along the way. And I didn't realize how important a name, like how intentional a name was supposed to be until now.
Yeah, many of us grapple so much with our identities. And like you said, our names inform so much of that. I've got four names. So it's Jonathan, Jack and Tumba Shamwana. So Jack and Tumba are my middle names. Mm. So I've got Jack, the British name, and Ntumba, the Zambian name. And for a while, I was very embarrassed about Ntumba. So I just leave it out, or I wouldn't tell people about it. Mm. And if they saw it on like the school register, it was like something, I'd feel like they were making fun of me about, even if they weren't. They were just like, oh, Ntumba, I didn't know that. And I remember having this really emotional conversation with my mum when I was like, when I'm older, I'm gonna make Jack like my first name. I just think it's a nicer sounding name than Jonathan. Mm-hmm. And although Jonathan doesn't sound like a traditional Zambian name, like it's got, you know, its own backstory. My mum's late brother's name is Jonathan. And so once you start to unpack a name, you realize how much it really can influence an identity. So I think that's powerful, you deciding to change your name back to Ted Yuya. It's really cool.
Thank you. It's definitely a journey. And I think all of us, you know, like when we, I think it's also such a vital conversation to have with our families and to really understand where it came from and to hear those stories, to really know like all the thought, all the emotions that they put into this one name that you'll be hearing maybe like the most amount of times in your life.
You've mentioned family quite a bit already. What was your family like growing up back in Myanmar? Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, definitely. I was born and raised for my entire life in Myanmar, specifically in Yangon, which used to be the capital. So my family is quite small. I have my mom, my dad, and I have a little brother who's not so little anymore, unfortunately. I just wish he was like this tiny my whole life, but he's 16 now and just growing into his own person. My mom is a stay-at-home mom, so she worked for a couple years before I was born, but as soon as I was born, she decided to commit to being a full-time mom, and my dad works full-time, and his work schedule is usually super hectic. So growing up, it would be like not seeing him very often. Well, and actually, I grew up backdoor neighbors with one of the most popular like pop/rock singers back home in Myanmar. He and my dad were close friends, and so before he and his wife, like before they had kids, they would always invite me over. I was kind of like their adopted child. I would go to his concerts, like be backstage and witness these like scenes I probably shouldn't have witnessed, because people were like throwing stuff at him. His fans were there. Like there were people cheering him on, but there were also haters who were like throwing water bottles or rocks and things like that. And so it was a lot to witness, but seeing that, growing up around that scene really just planted the idea in my head that one day I want to be some kind of artist. I don't care what it is, but I want to do something creative, something in front of people where I can connect to different people. So yeah, I think my parents definitely did not want to raise someone who wanted to become an artist, but it's somewhere in me and it's just a matter of time where that comes out. So we'll see when that happens.
You mentioned like realizing at a very early stage that creativity was important. Like you had this next door neighbor that was like a famous rocker. At what stage did you like start working on your own projects, even if they were like really small ones?
Mm-hmm. So the thing is, in terms of music, I've actually never worked on my own projects. That's something that maybe I could use your 6-minute rule and apply it time to time, because it's always been this fleeting idea. It would come in and out of, oh, I want to try out music, like songwriting, and you know, actually create my own things, because I love writing in general, but with songwriting it's just such a different phenomena that it's just so difficult for me to even try to take the first few steps, especially because I actually don't play any instruments very well. Like I've learned the piano before, I was in choir in high school, so I've learned how to read music, but never created my own music. And that's one very, very daunting but necessary goals that I want to achieve, hopefully in the near future. But in terms of other forms of creativity and art, I've loved dancing, although I've kind of stopped doing that for a while now. This is kind of embarrassing to admit, but I think I had my awakening where I would dance to get snacks. So my mom would take me to this little to this little corner store where like we were living in a pretty small like neighborhood, and so they like all the neighbors, we all knew each other. This corner store, the ladies who owned it, they knew me. They like adored me because I was this like chubby little kid. And every time I would come in the store, they'd be like, oh, dance for us. We'll give you some snacks. And I would actually do it. I was being rewarded for my behavior. And this is all stories my mom told me, of course. I don't have any memories of it. But maybe that's where it started. I'm like, huh, this could be something I can, you know, benefit from. But I've always loved dancing. Like as soon as I hear music, I can't stop my body. Like somehow it just moves. And then, yeah, it feels more like an instinct than anything else. And I've always loved reading as well. And I think it comes pretty naturally with reading a lot more books. Those were the biggest gifts from my childhood when my dad would come back from overseas trips. Like almost half his suitcase would be filled with books for me and my brother. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, like it was no kidding. Like he wouldn't really bring anything back. It was like a few bits of chocolate, but the primary gifts were books, and he treated it as these like very special gifts. And so growing up, it was like, oh, when he comes back, I'm going to get new books. And like in Myanmar, they didn't really sell that many English books. And even though I was speaking Burmese at home, I was learning English at school. And because of that, I also became more curious in writing. Those were some little first threads of, you know,
yeah,
dipping my toes into creativity.
I want to jump a bit forward in time, because when I told a couple of my friends that I was going to be recording with you, and all of them knew you, and I was like, oh, that's a bit
that's
strange.
That's scary.
But then I realized, and they all said it because they've watched your YouTube channel before. Mm-hmm. I think you posted your first video, at least the first one that's public, 4.5 years ago.
You never trust when you see someone's YouTube channel, you see the first video, they're like, yeah, it's the first one you have on public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did that actually start? And was it also a spontaneous decision, or did you really plan that out?
So it actually started a couple years before I even ever posted my own first video, because I started a channel with one of my best friends, and our channel was, okay, actually I'm not gonna say the name of the channel because it's still active. But we started,
you'll have to send me the link privately.
No. That's gonna be for another episode. We're not diving into it just yet. So we started a channel in 7th grade, I think. So we were like pretty young. I had braces on. We were very confident in ourselves. We're like, we're going to make this happen, become the biggest influencers and just travel the world. That was our goal. And we started making videos of get ready with us. I think we had a video that was called 10 Things People Assume. And we, you know, acted out different skits and scenarios where we pretended like we played the roles of like annoying people who would assume that, you know, ABC did something. And I think it made it easier that we were in it together. So it was way less intimidating. We're like, okay, if people see this at school and they make fun of us, at least we're in this together. It's not just ourselves, you know, being isolated in this. And so that went on for, actually, it was a pretty short run. I think we did it for like 4 months, and then we just got tired of it, stopped. And I didn't really think about YouTube for a while after that. But beginning of high school was when I started thinking about it again. The idea popped into my head, and at that point I had really not that many challenges. Like things were going well, things were going smoothly, and I found a pattern that more often than not I had friends coming to me for advice, asking me about different things like school, friendships, things like that. And so I was like, maybe I do know a little bit, like maybe I could help someone by sharing my experience. That was actually the reason why I started the channel. And then once I created a few videos, I was like, maybe this is a good way for me to also start documenting my college journey when it eventually comes. And so after that realization, the goal shifted for me to just start preparing for college. So it wasn't even really about high school anymore. Mm. It's just like, what am I going to do to get into college and to, you know, really live my best life there? Because I was like, the point of high school is just to anticipate college, right? So that was my whole vision. And that's how the YouTube channel started. Nothing, it wasn't too serious, just for fun, yeah.
I'm curious whether you think at all about oversharing, because you mentioned that it was kind of just a way for you to document your life and your lessons. And I guess what you do on Instagram is kind of similar, and that you're posting photos and there might be a caption. You're documenting your life. Are you ever concerned that you're sharing a bit too much, or sharing aspects of your life that you don't necessarily want to? Because, you know, like I said, there were some people that already knew who you were, and that's potentially scary. Is that something you ever think about?
Definitely. I think in terms of oversharing everything that I upload on the internet, I don't mind if like someone's grandma's cousin's friend, uncle finds out I chose to share it. It's all good. So there's no fear in that. The only thing that would hold me back from sharing more in the future is that idea that you just brought up of, you know, creating this first impression of me before even really getting to know me. And that is the scary part, because I think now at this point, I'm seeing the fact that I come from a country that very few people know about, and I go to a school that very few people know about. I hold that as a privilege. Yay. Because I really get to tell my own story. When people are like, where are you from? I'm from Myanmar. Oh, where's that? And I get to say this whole, like, you know, craft a whole story about what I think Myanmar is. Same with Minerva. And I think with having so much data about you on the internet that you yourself uploaded, which should mean that it's true, right? But also at the same time, it's data that I uploaded as like my 16-year-old self, 17-year-old self, who is somewhere in me, but also I've outgrown her for, you know, for so long. So I think that's what scares me, that maybe something that I upload will potentially limit me from having deeper connections than I could if I did not have that information about me out there.
It is quite a beautiful thought to think that, like, let's say you continue making videos for 10 years, for you to look back to videos from when you're like 16 years old, or, you know, I don't know, 10 bits of advice for high schoolers, that would be quite a powerful moment. Could definitely picture you like crying to one of those videos.
No, I'm already crying. I'm like, what? Just 3 years out, I look back and I'm like, she was so naive. She's so cute. Like, so I don't know, 10 years is, it's pretty scary, crazy to think about.
I think the first video that's at least public for now is called 10 Things I Wish I Knew in High School. And the one thing that you said that really struck a chord with me, I was getting all teary in my room. You said, everyone is going through the same thing. And it reminded me of this one Dave lyric. Dave's this British rapper. He said, we all cry the same tears on different cheeks. And I think it captures the same sentiment.
Is that okay, something now, that you now think you're going to make me cry. Wow, well, that's powerful. I'm still processing those lyrics. Okay, sorry. Yep. What was your question?
Is that something that you think about at all now? Or are there certain things that you think people don't realize that everyone's going through?
It's evolved definitely in different lyrics and different eye contact I have with people and dialogues I've exchanged, but the core idea still remains the same, that inherently we have very similar fears, very similar worries and things that we're afraid of. And one thing that has shifted my whole perspective on this is the power of vulnerability, because more often than not, you know, our first instinct and our assumption is that this problem, whatever we're going through, is very individual, and that absolutely nobody's going to understand what we're going through, because how could they? Like, we're the ones experiencing this. But more often than not, when I've chosen to be vulnerable to, of course, with people that I've formed more so deeper connections with and people I trust, whenever I would express these feelings, like, more than half of the time, it's always, yeah, I know I can understand or at least empathize with you and like see where you're coming from. And that just that first step of vulnerability has unlocked so many different doors to connections with people that I otherwise would not have. Only when I'm truly in those like states where I'm uncomfortable and I'm not sure how to deal with things alone, where I've really opened up and connected so deeply to people. So I'd rather have that then just like be in equilibrium or like zero state where I'm not feeling anything.
I 100% agree with you. And it's something I've struggled with a lot, because I'm a very happy person. and I get really uncomfortable when it deviates from that baseline. But recently I've been spending some time thinking intentionally about death and I don't know, the death of loved ones, and meditating on that, which is obviously a very painful thing to do, but it's I think it just contributes to a richer life.
Mm-hmm.
And even thinking to like things that we're all going through, one thing that's I've been thinking about a lot in Seoul is friendship and how most people are dissatisfied to some degree with their friendships. Like everybody feels, oh, everybody else has got so many friendships and they've got best friends and they've got a friendship group, but my friendships are so scattered and I don't feel like I have a best friend. And everybody's caught up in that same thing. Everybody's crying the same tears on different cheeks. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. You need to share with me the song, or at least the artist. I really need to see what the art they create is.
For sure. I'm curious. Let's say it's the end of Minerva. You've graduated and you were creating a video, 10 Things I Wish I Knew in College. What do you think you'd tell yourself?
Ooh. Okay, you know what? This is a sensitive topic. I'm kidding. It's happening so soon. I know it's just gonna just blitz right by, and before I know it, I'm gonna go to bed and wake up and it's like, put on your cap and gown, you're going down. And no, okay. But no, as much as I'm dreading this journey being over, I'm also actually, I don't wanna admit it to my friends because most of them are still super sad and just really not ready. Secretly, I'm like super, super, super excited because like, even if I stop my Minerva journey right now, I'm just so thoroughly satisfied with how I've lived it so far that I'm good. Mm. Like, I could drop out tomorrow if circumstances change and I'd still make peace with it. Like, I've already made peace with it. And so I've juggled that idea in my head quite often of what if I have to leave Minerva? Because with the situation back home, with my family, and just uncertainties around my education. And so I've like reached a few points where it was really like this close to the decision of should I drop out or should I keep going. And so because I've had those instances where I've questioned it so much, I've made sure that even if I have to drop out next semester, I'm good. I'll figure out what to do. This is something about me that I don't know if it's the healthiest thing, but before I make any decision, I've already thought out the process like way, way long before. If it's something that I'm going to grieve about, like I've gone through all the stages before I even decide I'm going to make that decision. So if I were to record a video telling, well, not you yet, I guess Helen, on the first day of Minerva, moving into 16 Turk Street all on her own, it was still COVID times. And so even though my aunt, who like lives close by, she was able to just drop me off at the door, but I had to go up on my own, figure it out, and just being out of the continent for the first time, just being in the US for the first time. I think the only thing I would tell her is that I don't need to tell you anything. I just want to instill that confidence in her so that whatever she decides to do, she knows that she can trust herself in what she's doing. And I think that's the only and the most valuable advice or lesson that I can give myself from 2 years ago. All naive, all shiny-eyed, looking to live her life. And of course, I still have that shine in my eyes, but less naive, more wise compared to her. And I know I'll keep growing as well. So if my future self is listening to me right now, that's what I would want her to tell me, that full confidence that like, girl, you got this. Just take your time.
Mm.
It will unroll itself.
I think that's so powerful. And I've received similar advice from other people, and it was exactly what I needed to hear at the time. So I don't want to scare you. Like you said, sensitive topic. Put your cap and gown. You're going down.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you think about your career after Minerva? And I'm also curious to hear whether there's like a clear delineation between what you view as career versus just like hobbies, or whether you don't distinguish between those two things.
Mm-hmm. So with how I envisioned my career at the moment, I actually had an epiphany just not too long ago, actually only a week ago, where I dropped one of my majors. Previously, I was double majoring in data science and arts and humanities, and I decided to Guess which one I dropped, though.
I think you dropped Arts and Humanities.
No.
Oh, okay.
Wrong
okay.
answer. I would never, even if someone was threatening to, I don't know, do something. No. Of course, data science was the one to go.
I was just trying to give the curveball answer. I thought there was a curveball coming.
Nah. No way, no. That was the most clarity I felt in a while. It just, I was like, this makes so much sense. Not to like go too deeply into like why I chose data science, whatnot. Essentially, so much of my decision to keep that double major was me being stubborn and making my decisions based on the sphere of, you know, practicalities, visas after graduating, things like that. And then I found out that in order to qualify for the OPT, which, you know, like as international students to get a few more years to live and work in the US, it will only be valid if I was working in the specific field that I was studying. And I know I will never work in data science, at least not purely data science. I'm like, this doesn't make any more sense to me. So I made that decision, said bye to data science. Now I am purely an AH, design across the humanities girly, and I couldn't be happier. So after I had that epiphany, I also started questioning, you know, where I want to be, what I want to do, things like that. And for so much of my life, the field of education has been the core. And being the first and currently only, which I'm trying to change, person from Myanmar who's at Minerva, I feel half a sense of responsibility and half a sense of this drive to do something about that. And I don't have specific concrete ideas of how I want to go about it just yet, but I do know that education is something that needs a lot of iteration and revision back home. And I want to go about it in a very intentional way that takes into account, you know, the country's history and what the country has gone through and incorporating that into the education. And what does history mean anyways? And instead of it being like, I received education from an American institution and now I'm going to use all of what I learned from the US to just like change everything. Like, that's really not the approach I want to take. I really want to be intentional about identity and how culture plays such a big role in how education is structured. So that's the current goal that I'm working with. And I say very big things and I don't know if I'll do it, but I'll put it out there for the universe to hear. And if I end up doing it, great. If not, I'll pivot and say something else. So currently, after I had that realization, I've been continuing, as you said, hobbies that I've already been working on and also starting to consider, okay, well, now that that's my goal, what activities can I spend more time on so that I'm maybe indirectly or directly preparing to build the skills? And one thing that I started as a hobby, which was website designing, has actually turned, first time I started web designing was for this film production company back home. I was redesigning their website and I realized I really enjoy the process of experimenting and playing around with different user experiences. I treated it as like a single project and I had fun with it, but that was done. And just recently, the projects just started coming back to me. So now I think I'm viewing it as more of a potential element to my career, not necessarily the bulk of it. My goal would be to spend my time on activities that I treat as hobbies that eventually turn into something more. But also I do want to keep some hobbies sacred and intentionally keep them from transforming so that I have this safe space of not putting pressure and like having to assign any value or like worth based on what I create. So definitely a fine balance, but for the most part, I think having hobbies turning into careers is super cool.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep some of them sacred. And now that I've like taken up photography, I'm almost intentionally trying to stay bad or mediocre because I'm scared that if I
get that must be so hard, huh?
I know, I'm just overflowing with talent and potential. But if I were to get like a new lens and to take some course and really get into it, I feel that I take the process too seriously. And then I put it on the same, like, I don't know, pedestal that I put my writing on, and it would suck the playfulness out of it at least. Like, now it's very much this relaxing thing. For anybody listening that hasn't checked out New Year's websites, they've blown my mind. Oh my God.
Thank you. I think you too kind.
Designed the ones for the one for this podcast, Humans of Minerva, the one for the magazine, Napkins, and they both look incredible.
Thank you so much.
So before we onto the fast fire round of questions, which I've updated just for you, so you should feel very special and nice. Do you want to give a shout out to anyone?
I do. Well, okay. One would be very hard, but I'll choose. I want to give a shout out to Dasha Panasenko. I'm going to make her listen to this episode. So if the editors decide to keep this in, she'll definitely hear this. So I expect a single tear to fall from a single eye. I'm going to give a shout out to her. And, you know, I really don't need to give a reason because she knows why I'm giving a shout out to her. But if I were to pick a reason, it might be unexpected to any listener other than Dasha, but it's really teaching me how to be angry and being very intentional with that. To me, anger was never a valid emotion to hold. And she has nurtured this side of me in a way that makes me feel very empowered and safe at the same time to hold this uncomfortable emotion inside of myself and also feel comfortable expressing it in a way that feels healthy. And that's one of the biggest pivots of my growth so far. And for that, I am forever grateful. So thank you very much, Dasha. I love you.
Very sweet. And I hope Dasha's listening. You'll make sure of it. Okay. Fast fire round of questions.
Let's go.
So just don't think too much. Give me a quick response. Maybe a quick justification, maybe not. Your choice.
Okay.
First one, favorite pasta shape.
You know that like bow pasta? I don't know the name, but like the bow, classic, best texture ever.
If you had to kill me, how would you go about it?
If I told you, I would have to kill you. Next.
Oh, nice. Wow. FaceTime, calls, or texting?
Well, if it was my mom, not FaceTime, because I got a septum piercing, she cannot see it. Other than that, FaceTime.
The last interesting YouTube or Netflix video you watched?
I would have to say just like music videos. That's what I spend most of my YouTube time on. So I can't think of a single one, but just lots and lots of very weird, very cool music videos.
Nice. While walking around the city, music, a podcast, or silence?
First instinct is silence, unless... Actually, no. Silence.
Camping or binge-watching shows at home?
What about binge-watching while camping in a tent?
Oh, I like that. What's your spirit fruit? So if you had to be a fruit or have a fruit represent you, what would it be?
I have a good one. Okay, now that I say it, it's too much pressure. but. my spirit... Anything. Like, you can ask me for my spirit vegetable, my spirit animal, whatever. It's a durian. Sharp on the outside, soft and creamy, just sweet on the inside.
Sharp, gentle, and successful. I like it. If you could put a billboard on the busiest street in BA, what would it say?
Oh, wow. First of all, it would have to be in Spanish, and I've been taking classes, but I'm not that good. But, my favorite phrase so far in Spanish has been no tanto, which means not really. For some reason, that stuck with me, so maybe I'll just do that. But designed in a very graphically pleasing way, it just says no tanto. Let people interpret however they want to.
Okay. And this isn't one of the questions, but I'm curious because of your answer to the pasta, the bow tie pasta. Do you cook a lot? And do you have any recommendations? Because in Seoul, I'm basically cooking every single day and loving it, but my dishes are so basic.
Honestly, I don't have too much advice because I've been rotating the same like three dishes, maybe four if we're feeling adventurous. Dasha and I cook together all the time. We do a salad or some kind of cream, mushroom, lemon pasta that's really good. Or like a fried noodle dish with lots of veggies. But our salad is really good. So if you want the recipe, I can give that to you. Dutch is vegetarian, so we usually cook vegetarian dishes, and mushroom is the staple. Like whatever we cook, we put mushroom in. But I've been trying to get better. I subscribe to the New York Times, and the recipe recommendations, okay. It's been really good. Not that I've tried any, but they all look amazing. So that's my next step. Yeah, I want to try those.
Okay. So for anyone listening, if you're interested in the salad or the fried noodles or any mushroom dishes, one of the recipes will be in the episode description. Ooh. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
So just look out for that. Yuya, what's the best way for the audience to reach you if they want to discuss things, want a website designed, or just want to chat to you?
Always welcome. You can reach out to me on my Instagram. It's at Tetyuya, H-T-E-T-Y-U-Y-A. No space, no underscore, no capital.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Yuya, and been lovely having you on your pod.
Thank you so much for having me.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and automatically get notified about new episodes on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at humansofminerva.podcast for all the latest updates and announcements. And finally, special thanks to our editor, Hilary Tang, for working her magic on this episode. Thanks for listening to Humans of Minerva.